This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
This is iRadio's
Group Chat.
If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.
My next guest is Sophie Brady, who has bravely shared her own experience of sexual assault and is now calling for changes to the law to better protect victims. She's campaigning for tougher sentences for sexual violence and for an end to counselling notes being used in court cases. Sophie, thank you so much for joining me on iRadio's Group Chat. First of all, can you tell me a little bit about your own experience and also how it shaped your view of the justice system.
My experience was basically childhood sexual abuse by two family members. They're my cousins, and they're in prison now. So they're in Midlands prison since last March. But it was horrific. And I think I kind of really normalized it when I was a kid. It was just brushed under the carpet. I think, I told a family member and I was promised that they would deal with it and it would go away and not to bring it up again. And I didn't, for the most part, I still thought about it and I knew that it was wrong and that I didn't like it. But I was so young, I was 7 years of age, you know what I mean? Your mind isn't formed, let's just say, now I knew right from wrong and I knew that it wasn't something that I enjoyed, but yeah, I think I very much just kind of got on with my life and I got on with it for the most part, as best as I could. And then it was only when I got to be in my late teenage years after I'd left school, I was very in school. I was so rebellious. I just didn't want to be there. I didn't want to listen to adults. And looking back now, after researching things and listening to webinars and podcasts and not going to therapy per se myself, but having been in that kind of an environment and being around therapists and listening to the language that's used and kind of realizing how awful it actually was. Now that I'm older and I'm at that stage, I'm 27, I could have my own family now, and I'm we have a certain responsibility as adults to children and how we protect them. And I just didn't have that. And the justice system just continually let me down as well. I couldn't trust any of the adults in my family or in my life. And then the justice system to re-traumatize you and to re-trigger everything that you've you thought you've overcome, I guess.
What specific parts of the current sentencing framework in Ireland do you think is falling short when it comes to that? What is it that is re-triggering people, just so that someone who's listened to this evening who might not have been in your shoes, they might understand what exactly you mean by that?
I think the entire process, so from start to finish, to break it down very simply, in the time that I've got, I think even initially making my statement was awful. I don't think that I was prepared for it at all. It was just this one day of courage, I suppose, or one day of bravery where I was like, you know what? No, I am here sitting in the pits of depression. There's so many aspects of my life that are on hold or that, I can't get past this. It doesn't feel just. So making an initial statement is hugely brave. And for anybody that, is considering coming forward, I urge you to do it. As awful as the justice system is, there is a sense of justification, I suppose, at the end, and a sense of, okay, I did the right thing for myself. But making that initial statement was awful. The information, or the lack of information, I should say, sorry, the entire way through, like, I didn't hear from the guards, I didn't hear from the people that took my statement, the investigation team, the DPP, like, everything just takes so long. I think at one stage, a year and a half had gone by and I hadn't had a check-in or any kind of an update. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to ring here and find out myself because no one's reaching out to me. I've gone to the bottom of a list. I always have said this from the beginning. I felt like a tick the box exercise and not a human being. And it was just, it's so inhumane. And then actually hearing the news that the DPP are willing to pursue the case and that there's enough evidence here to actually maybe convict people was massive. And again, no support. Like, that's one phone call, one afternoon, and you're there left. When you hang up that call, you're supposed to just go back to work, or, you know, you could be in the middle of Aldi doing your food shopping. Like, it's just, there's no consideration taken into account whatsoever for the victim or the survivor. And then actually going to court, like, whether it's the person pleads guilty or not guilty, you have no support. Whether, you know, there's a conviction, they're sentenced, or they get to go home and walk free that day, you walk out of court and you're very much alone unless you reach out yourself to rape crisis centres or therapists, or, you know, there isn't, unless you access it yourself, there isn't anybody actually extending the hand here, checking in and making sure you're okay. And if you don't come from a really supportive family, or you don't have siblings, or you don't have a partner, like, I was so lucky I had my partner the entire way through. And I genuinely, I don't think that I'd be standing if I didn't. I don't know how I made it through with no support from family. You know, it's incredibly difficult. So the system is supposed to be there, and it's designed to be there for the victim. And it says, it's quoted, you know, everywhere, it's victim centered and victim focused. But from my experience and thousands of others that I've spoken to, it's just not. It's fallen down everywhere.
I know that you've been campaigning for tougher sentences for sexual violence, but also for an end to counselling notes being used in court cases. What is the core issue with that for survivors? Explain to us where you're coming from with that in particular.
So counselling notes are third party. You go to a counsellor to help yourself heal. It's part of this journey of acceptance and learning to live with the things that have happened to you. And nobody goes into counselling with a script. It's very raw. It's your deepest emotions, the most heartfelt things that you have ever felt. You know, people go in and say all the time, it's natural, like, it's normal human being behavior to go, okay, did I bring this on myself? Or maybe it was my fault, or maybe I didn't scream loud enough, or I didn't run fast enough, or I wore the wrong thing. And as women, I think particularly, we do question and self-doubt, and that is a very human response. That is just a conversation between you and a person that you trust wholeheartedly, because this is what they're there for, is to help and to support you. But knowing at the end of that process, or even when you're still going through it, if your court date comes sometime between, like, if you're still actively attending therapy, you should be prepping yourself in therapy for, how is my body going to handle this psychologically, physically? It's really draining. It takes a massive toll on your body actually getting on a stand or walking into a courtroom. It is your emotions. I can't even explain. You're just up to high dough. Like, every instinct in your body kicks in. For me, it was like I had fits of, like, shaking. I had cold sweats. I couldn't eat for weeks on end. This sleeping was just non-existent. The nightmares, both for months before and afterwards, are horrific. But knowing that all of those deeper, most inner thoughts and emotions and words that you've spoken in confidence could be used against you as evidence from a third party source. Like, a therapist is just a third party person. Like, they weren't at the scene of the crime. They are just taking notes based on what you have said. And often you remember things wrong. You know what I mean? Like, blaming yourself is something that every single survivor or victim has done, but it's never your fault. So I think that the issue with them being used in court is that, well, one of two things are happening here. People are going to counselling and they're having to nearly be careful of what they say. And, like, that's not how you heal. that's not what the purpose of therapy is. You're supposed to be able to allow yourself to just feel all of the feelings and talk everything through. And that's how you make it out the far side. That's what progress looks like. But then the other side of that is, if people know going into court dates and trials and it, that those notes are going to be used, some people like me might just abstain completely from going. So you put your own healing on hold for the sake of your own emotions not being used against you.
And even regardless of whatever you're going to therapy for, you are really told that, you know, this is just between you and your counsellor. This is where you can be really, really honest. You can express parts of yourself that maybe you even haven't come to terms with. So I can imagine that, you know, many people have said, many survivors have said that the possibility of their private counselling records being reviewed is deterring them from seeking therapy, because, you know, they don't want all of their innermost thoughts to be put out for public consumption. But what specific legal change do you think would make counselling notes actually protected from being used in court? What would be the ideal situation?
For me and for everybody involved in the campaign, we have just asked for an outright ban. No ifs, no buts about it. It should just be an outright ban, because anything less than that is still re-traumatizing and it's still re-triggering. And as the victims and the survivors and the therapists, by the way, like, we're all on the same page about this. It just seems to be the department that isn't. We have all said, we're singing off the same hymn sheet. This is exactly what everybody is asking for. And anybody making any other change to that would just not suffice. So, you know, the Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, has said, I kind of agree with what you're saying. An outright ban, it's not possible. It's not in the legislation. Like, they talk as if legislation can't be changed, which really, really infuriates me. And because these are the people that we've come to because they're able to make the change. But it seems like they're just actively choosing not to. And they're not listening to victims and survivors, and they're not listening to therapists. And these are the people on the ground that this affects day in and day out. So anything less than an outright ban would just be an insult. They're talking now about making counselling notes somewhat privileged. So I don't know if you're familiar, but like, even in the Dáil, like, there's Dáil privilege. So two TDs can roar at each other and they can call them each other any name under the sun, and they have Dáil privilege. Nothing could be done about that, because what's said in the Dáil is essentially privileged. And there are certain, you know, priests are the same. What you say in a confession booth, it's privileged, you know, it can't go anywhere else. The priest can't bring that information anywhere. So I think it should be the same for counselling, and the therapists are all on board with this. They would be more than happy if that's what came into legislation. But as it stands now, currently, most, like, I would confidently say 90% of the therapists in the country have taken a note to say they're not happy with having to disclose and hand over counselling notes. And second of all, most of them now have just decided that they're not going to take notes anymore, which is, for the survivor and the victim and the person that's actually going to counselling, it's actually damaging their journey in counselling. Because if the therapist doesn't have notes, like, they could try X, Y, and Z 1 week, a route of how to talk to you or how to deal with a certain incident that's happened, or, you know, it's like extending a hand of trying to get you to talk about something. But if they're not taking notes, they're not going to remember week in, week out what they've discussed with each individual, because they're seeing so many clients.
I know some lawmakers, like you said, would make an argument that a full ban might raise constitutional concerns about a fair trial and things like that. But if you could speak directly to the policymakers that hold that view right now, what is the most important message you'd want them to hear?
If there was any of them happened to be listening, or, you know, they research or they find this or someone sends it to them, I would just say, can you just listen to the victims and the survivors and the therapists and the people that this actually affects? We're asking for bare minimum for counselling notes not to be used. It's genuinely not extravagant, and it's something that they could do. Constitution can be changed. And the right to a fair trial, this line doesn't sit well with me at all, because it's only in sexual abuse cases where counselling notes are used at all. So, like, if I broke into your house in the morning and I did something to you, or I damaged your property, and I went to counselling and I admitted that I did the whole thing myself and I felt guilty or whatever, like, there's an admission of guilt there. In cases like that, the notes are never used. In any other crime ever, the notes are never used for counselling. So I don't understand, when it comes to sexual crimes, when it's so intimate and so raw, why this is the only time we're using them.
If there's someone listening to you this evening on the other side of it who might be a survivor like yourself, who hasn't maybe spoken out yet or are really afraid to come forward, what advice would you give to them?
I think it's really important that we're still encouraging people to come forward. You know, if we sit on our hands and we don't say anything, and I get that it's really, really difficult. Trust me, I do. My own story is far from being finished just yet. Change doesn't happen overnight, and silence doesn't impact anything. You know, nothing changes without people speaking forward and coming out. And it's wrong. What happened to you is wrong, and I'm really, really sorry that it happened to you. It's horrific, and you didn't deserve it. But you also don't deserve to suffer forever and be alone in the suffering and in the silence. It wasn't your fault. It's not your crime. It's not your guilt. So everything in you should be compelling you to move forward. And if you can at all, if you can find the strength from anywhere, come forward, because it's hard. It's really, really hard, trust me. But the sense of, oh my God, I actually did this and they're behind bars tonight, no one can ever take that away from you.
Well, Sophie, thank you so much for sharing your story with me on iRadio's group chat. As you said there, like, the strength that you've had has been remarkable, and I'm so sorry that all of this has happened to you, but to have you use this pain now for a campaign that you're really passionate about is so raw and so beautiful to see. So thank you so much for telling me all about it on iRadio's group chat, and I am sure we will chat again.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.